House Committee on Business and Labor, Hearing Room C, Tuesday, February 12, 2008, Chair Mike Schaffler.
Some labor. Today we're just having an informational hearing. Is this correct?
It is. The acronym is incorrect. There's a typo on the agenda. My apologies, Mr. Chair, but the name of the center is correct.
I'll read it off of here. Make sure it's a mouthful for old Mike's. We're at an informational hearing on the Center for Research on Occupational and Environmental Toxicology at OHSU. And we have a list of...
No.
I'm going to invite all these brilliant doctors up here to come talk. I apologize. I don't have a list of all your names in front of me. So come on up, guys. And I, just for everybody knows, Representative Ron Maurer and I sit on CROET's advisory committee, along with a lot of labor and industry and healthcare folks. So just whoever wants to go first, just tear into it.
Mr. Chair, can I jump in real quickly? I can tell already I'm going to like this.
Yeah, I got one of those at home, too. It actually shows you how to properly cut timber, which I think is a pretty good idea to have around the house in Oregon.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you very much, members of the committee. Allow me to introduce Dr. Kent Anger and Dr. Fred Berman. Dr. Anger is the Associate Director of CROET, and Fred Berman heads up our Toxicology Information Center. I appreciate very much the opportunity to present today on CROET at OHSU. CROET is really Oregon's investment in occupational injury and disease prevention. We do this via knowledge creation, our research programs. We disseminate that knowledge, we educate, and we apply to the workforce through training with special focus on sectors that are at special risk. Now, the history of CROET is one in which state funds were invested not in curative forms of intervention, but rather preventative forms. The history begins around about 1983 with the closure of the Callahan Rehabilitation Center in Wilsonville and the decision by the state, under the advice of a statewide advisory committee of stakeholders, to focus the money on research that could be used to prevent the dollar and human costs of workplace injury and disease as a joint exercise between business and labor. In 1987, funds were then earmarked to create a new research center, at that time called the Center for Occupational Disease Research, that would be placed under the care of OHSU with base funding from DIF at that stage, Department of Consumer and Business Services now. The direction of the center was decided at the university to be heavily focused on the neurosciences and on behavior as an investment for the future. And the center director, myself, was recruited. And upon arrival in Oregon, my task was to recruit a world-class faculty that could focus on original research in education, outreach, and training. And my first recruit was indeed Dr. Kent Anger on my right. Fast forward to 1995, when OHSU moved from a state agency to a public agency, and contemporaneously CROET then received a slight adjustment in terms of its base funding that I'll explain momentarily in order to build this multifaceted program, which now includes a Toxicology Information Center, which, as I mentioned, is headed up by Dr. Fred Berman, and a Chemical Risk Information Service that I will get to momentarily. So our base funding comes from the amount of revenue produced by 1/16 of 1% of the money deducted from workers' wages, with an equal amount from the Workers' Benefit Fund. Now, the Committee on Management and Labor, of course, has great interest in our progress over the years, and under their guidance, it was recommended that we expand our web-based and conventional outreach program, which was substantially increased from 1996. We're now at a 20-year anniversary. Over the years, we have been very successful in leveraging our precious state dollars from DCBS to obtain federal and other sources of funding, private funding, and bring those funds into the state of Oregon. You can see the performance here. By and large, $1 of state investment has generated two or more dollars of federal funds, which then are brought into Oregon and have a multiplier effect. Because, of course, these funds are spent within Oregon, and because these individuals may then develop spin-off companies which will bring further investment into the state. Our program, then, is multifaceted. Our state mandate on the books is to conduct basic and applied research, outreach, and education to address Oregon's occupational health needs. And so the base funding goes for occupational activities. Environment is in our title, and this is because we can attract funds dedicated by the federal government for environmental studies and use those by winning those grants competitively, bringing those funds in to support our essentially occupational mission and dovetail it with then the occupational and environmental research that we're performing. We focus great emphasis on the discovery of new knowledge, whether it be from our basic or applied scientists, and we translate that through to both the bedside, the workplace, and to public health, with a focus on prevention of disease. As I mentioned briefly, we also use that new knowledge in the technology transfer vein in order to set up spin-offs. We also use our knowledge on state, regional, national, and international committees where we believe we can make significant contributions to promotion of health and placing occupational issues on the front burner. We, of course, provide training in a limited fashion to sectors of the workforce, and we also train students, whether they be high school, college, graduate students, or postdocs, to develop professional interests and expertise within the area of occupational health. And we have a very, very active outreach program that Dr. Kent Anger will speak about, including the website, and I'll mention the Chemical Risk Information Service and the Toxicology Information Center. So it's really quite a well-rounded program, we believe. But there is always room for improvement, and we seek constant criticism and input and advice, as Representative Sharpe mentioned, from our advisory committee on CROET, that reports to the president of OHSU. This is a sort of voluntary extension of a previously mandated statewide committee that was mandated by the state of Oregon in setting up the center, but we were very keen to have stakeholders engaged on a continuing basis, and so we have benefited from the continuance of this advisory group. Now, among the funds that we've won, and we often do this in concert with other agencies, in this case with the health division, or what we used to call the health division, to win a program that the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health sponsors, known as the FACE program, or the Fatality Assessment and Control Evaluation Program. The purpose of this is to identify traumatic occupational fatalities within the state of Oregon through the development of a statewide surveillance network. To investigate one-on-one individual occupational fatalities, and to build a multidisciplinary team that can then analyze the surveillance data and the individual fatality data, and then develop and disseminate program prevention strategies for these fatal injuries. Now, this is a research program, as I mentioned. It's in no way related to the enforcement of state or federal occupational safety and health standards, and there's no determination of fault or blame. What happens is that an investigative report is issued, it's placed on our website for all to see, with the goal of trying to understand why the fatality occurred in the first place and what could we do to prevent it occurring a second time. The areas of emphasis are falls, they're machine-related, farming, forestry, fishing, wood and paper products, transportation, youth workers, etc. Now, this is the tragedy that I wanted to share with you, that over the last, over the period 2003-2006, some 278 total fatalities in the workplace. And you can see immediately that transportation is the number one, although perhaps one of the most dangerous activities is in logging. And you see the other categories where fatalities have occurred, and so our mission is quite broad in trying to develop intervention programs through, initially through education, that can reach all of these industries. Focusing on transportation, factors that drive this, obviously weather, curves in the road. Importantly, drowsiness and fatigue are factors that I'll come back to. Alcohol is always there, especially among younger folks. The picture in the lower right-hand corner is the example of a driver using a cell phone. Speeding is common. Absence of seatbelt use, uncommonly bridge failure. A high proportion of these incidents occur in the dark, and suggesting that time of day is important in terms of maintaining vigilance and risk for accidents. If we look at DCBS information on lost workday rates by industry, again you can see that transportation leads the way there. If we look at injury claims, these are data outside of the FACE program, are consistent with it. You'll see that in transportation injury claims, it's mostly males. Those under 35 years of age make up 51%, and those less than 1 year on the job perhaps are at greatest risk. Again, claim rates seem to change with the time of the day, so people are most vigilant between the time 6 a.m. to noon, and that's where the lowest claim rates occur. The average compensable lost workdays during the period in which this study was done, which was just before 2000, was close to 60, higher for males than females, and dramatically increasing with the advance of age. So a 65-year-old truck driver is going to have a substantially greater number of lost workdays following injury in a transportation accident than a younger worker. Claim amounts you can see there. Interestingly, again, the day of the week and the time of the day are important factors in dictating the average claim amount, or at least they correlate with it, suggesting that the level of injury and the severity of the accident may be related to time of day and even day of the week. What comes out of this analysis is that sprains and strains are the major outcome, multiple trauma and fractures a relatively small percentage, and other factors, other injuries, smaller still. Now, among the priority areas is logging, and so indeed, as you held up earlier, we have developed a booklet specifically on the Faller's Log of Safety. This has been widely disseminated, very well received. It does document individual fatalities, providing descriptions of the events surrounding those fatalities. Tree falling is perhaps the most dangerous job in the state of Oregon. And then if you look at injury claims, the highest average per claim cost is for adolescents in logging and millwork. And so the product of this FACE program is in the form of a variety of reports and advisories, some of which you have before you. I'm holding up now what we refer to as an investigation report that will be sent back to the company where the fatality has occurred. And we receive feedback from our investigation reports and our hazard alerts and the other reports and conferences that we hold. I'll read one of them to you. This comes from Jeff Smith, who's safety director at Adroit Construction Company. I think this is a very valuable tool for Oregon employers. It's virtually the only way for me to stay in tune with what is happening in my industry. The depth of information is not available anywhere else. This is an invaluable source of information for the safety professional. Your investigative report set the standards for the safety industry. The free exchange of information and ideas that you foster with this site no doubt saves human misery and lives. And he's managed to get those reports off the website. Now, a priority area that we have focused on recently is adolescents and workers up to the age of 24. You can see that transportation is a major factor here and includes transportation accidents on land and on water. We are involved at the present time in launching an Oregon Young Worker Health and Safety Coalition together with the labor education organization LURC in order to develop a curricula specifically for high schoolers going into high schools to teach them about fatalities using both this young worker Stay Alive on the Job booklet, which we found to be a very powerful instrument because it does provide graphic examples to young folks of their peers who were killed on the job in Oregon from 2003 to 2006. And in addition, by providing this feedback on our research findings to the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, they incorporate our findings along with those from other states to produce state-specific booklets that are directed, for example, at training the teachers, and we are therefore engaged in using this booklet as well to train Oregon teachers, and we're also working with high schools in concert with other agencies to try to bring this home to the adolescent worker about the cardinal importance of safety on the job. So this is a research program which is bringing in federal dollars. The folks who are working on it are part supported by federal dollars, part supported by the DCDS Oregon State funding. Now, in addition to that, our faculty are engaged in other research programs, and I use a couple of examples here to try to show how our research programs are tied to these major issues in occupational safety and health in Oregon. Dr. Ryan Olson is focusing his efforts on the transportation industry, and he's involved in a multi-year program to develop interventions to try to improve the health and safety and longevity of our truckers. The emphasis here is on self-management because these folks, of course, are driving alone often or in pairs. And he is trying to develop tools that will provide them both alone and within teams of drivers, which may be competitive with other teams, to develop programs, for example, in nutrition to try to reduce obesity, which is clearly a factor associated with a risk for accident, to try to develop other tools that will help maintain the safe work practices. Now, I mentioned to you that time of the day seems to be an extremely relevant factor, and so Dr. Charles Allen is another faculty member who's not working with the trucker, but he's working, if you like, with the surrogate of the trucker's brain. And what he's doing then is studying in minute detail the areas of the brain which are involved in keeping us awake and telling us to go to sleep, and trying to understand what are the major drivers that the brain uses to try to force the individual to sleep, and what happens to rhythms, daily rhythms, when individuals stay awake. So he's looking at the physiology then of pacemaker nerve cells in the brain that dictate and control cycles of sleep and wakefulness, the circadian clock. And from this, we are learning about the fundamental mechanisms for which we perhaps have less than the adequate degree of respect that we might wish to have for them in terms of how we set our shift work hours. if the brain is telling us to go to sleep after 8 hours, maybe it's not a good idea to keep us awake for 12 hours. And then especially if Ryan Olson comes along and says, well, yes, look at the literature. Nurses drop off in their safety rate in the 8th to the 12th hour, or truckers are apparently having a greater rate of injury during the wee hours of the morning. How can we use this fundamental research then to guide our workforce, to guide the community, to try to improve the safety on the job, to try to limit the injuries and fatalities and expense, both in human costs and dollar costs that result from that? So what I've said is that we're trying to understand brain-driven behaviors. Now, OHSU set up an institute under the guidance of the state mandate, as I mentioned, that will be focused primarily on the brain and on behaviors. So here, 20 years later, is an example of a program in activity. And having, I think, not just sitting in the university armchair gathering data, but really out in the grassroots, working with truckers, for example, understanding the factors that can cause or lead to injury, and trying to work with them on equal partnership to try to improve their lives and try to reduce fatalities. Now, in addition to trauma, which of course is a major driver of workers' comp costs, there is also an issue with regard to chemical risk in the workplace. And we're also very proud of really more of a service that we've been permitted to set up within the confines of CROIT, in which Oregon businesses provide a subscription in order for us to provide them with quality information relating to chemical risks. So there are really two types of programs here, both relating to the OSHA hazard communication standard. One is the right to know, and so we have some 41 companies around Oregon that are subscribers at this time. The right to know then service provides safety information to employees. Material safety data sheets are stored within our facility, and these are provided on a request basis. We also provide quality information in terms of interpreting the content of those material safety data sheets to help employees understand them. If a further problem comes up, they may be referred to Dr. Fred Berman with respect to intensive investigation in the Toxicology Information Center. And if it's more of an emergency nature, then of course they're immediately referred to the Oregon Poison Center, that really has a different service. These are responding to health issues that have an immediacy to them, rather than perhaps concerns relating to exposures to a chemical in the workplace. And then the second aspect to this program is the product stewardship service that provides a 24/7 service all around the world for our multinational companies here in Oregon, such as Hewlett-Packard, that will have customers then in India, in elsewhere across the world, who may have concerns relating, oh, I don't know, for example, to a solvent that is used in one of their printers. They can call us and obtain free information relating to the nature of the chemical, relating to the hazard that it may present, relating to the suggested appropriate use of that particular chemical. Hewlett-Packard is one of our main supporters in terms of a subscriber to this service. Multnomah County is another one, Corporate Express, and as you can see here, this is a growing miniature business within CROIT, in which we're harnessing our resources and providing them to help business and to help the workforce. At this point, I'd like to close my remarks and hand this over to Dr. Kandanga, who can discuss with you the information and outreach side of CROWIT.
Thank you, Peter. So, in terms of both the current as well as the future Oregon workplace, we are providing information that they need and can use in making their workplace safe or safer. And the first one that I'll mention is CROWITweb.com, which is basically a site that we've developed and we pay for. And it is a directory of information. You can see a picture of it on the board on the screen at the present time, which basically identifies safety and health information for different industry sectors and by different kinds of problems. We get around 200 hits per year, and the folks from Oregon OSHA, who are the trainers, say that in their classes they tell us that they tell people that this is one of the top, if not the one of the top sites, if not the top site, for providing information on occupational safety and health. Of course, it's focused on Oregon and the industries in Oregon, and so you may see some omissions that are not as relevant for Oregon. We also have the Toxicology Information Center, which gets around 200 calls per year, and you can see a picture on the board, or you can see Fred live right here sitting next to me, who answers questions. And so any Oregonian who wants to call up and ask a question about a chemical that they're concerned with, Fred in that center will answer that. And while 200 calls may look like a small number of calls, there oftentimes will be hours or even days of work answering the question, providing documentation, and sending it to the requester. So it's a very rich experience for the requester, and we do get very positive responses from people who express their appreciation for the information Fred provides. It's more on the safety and the safety side than Dee Dee Montgomery, who's our industrial hygienist, who runs the CROWITweb.com, will answer those questions probably. We have newsletters and annual reports, and you've got one of those newsletters in front of you, our most recent one. And it talks about basically what we're doing at the center and information research, classes that might be useful to Oregon companies, and we distribute it out to a wide number of Oregonians and companies in labor. I think at the last advisory committee meeting, Representative Schaffler encouraged us to increase the distribution list on this, and so it's one of the many suggestions that went in our revised strategic plan, so we appreciated those recommendations. We also put out an annual report. You see a biannual report in front of you, actually, from the biennium before this. The next one will be coming out. It'll include 06 and 07 sometime towards the end of this year, not calendar year, but by June or July. We also attend all Oregon OSHA conferences. Here are a couple of pictures that are from the GOSH conference, which is the biggest conference, but we're at all the conferences. We have exhibits there, and you can see pictures of people, you know, talking to the many people that come up to the booth and to learn more. And while every place we go, many people know about CROWIT Web and the information center and about CROWIT, and a large number also don't know. And so we have a lot of questions to answer and information to provide. We've never sort of gotten where we've completely covered the state. So we continue to go to all the OSHA conferences. And then, of course, there's a CROWIT website on research and education that you can go to, the .edu site that's available for people to learn more about the center. That'll be updated within the next couple of weeks, actually, as OHSU goes to a new unified website design. Well, we also provide education programs, and one of the main ones are health and safety symposia. There's a picture of one up there now. And the two that we've done in the last year are the titles are shown up there on substance use and safety in the workplace and safety at work and in informal and non-traditional settings, protecting vulnerable workers. So basically what we do is cover things that OSHA isn't going to cover. They're doing code kinds of things and real specific kinds of training. We take a step back and look at somewhat wider pictures of things generally. We also bring in graduate students and postdocs, and they're kind of, as Peter mentioned, they're the professional safety and health and occupational researchers, both basic and applied scientists, of the future. And when they come into our programs, they're learning how to become essentially those high-level professionals that Peter mentioned, those world-class scientists, as he said, that have been gathered at our center. And we have 20 to 35 per year. Our summer student intern program is another one. We get 10 to 15 students per year. This is a picture of the at the end of the last summer's time period, where the summer students have to put up a poster that describes what they've done over the course of the summer. And those posters are developed in a professional vein, the way you'd see at a professional meeting, and then the faculty come around and ask tough questions of them, and ask, you know, various kind of make comments on the presentations, and of course the faculty are also involved in helping them develop these things, so it's kind of an interesting competitive sort of setting. Here's a picture of our class from last year. Also, two people win poster awards for the best posters of the year, which Peter presented again this year. And then finally, we have Oregon School Visits. Two programs that we've supported quite a bit are Women in Science and Saturday Academy. And these are pictures up on the screen of some of those experiences where kids, basically high school kids, come in and learn what research is about in a very short period by being in the research labs within the center. And then they may come back to us as summer student interns. And from the summer student program, we've had kids come back.
The areas of the brain which are involved in keeping us awake and telling us to go to sleep, and trying to understand what are the major drivers that the brain uses to try to force the individual to sleep, and what happens to rhythms, daily rhythms, when individuals stay awake. So he's looking at the physiology then of pacemaker nerve cells in the brain that dictate and control cycles of sleep and wakefulness, the circadian clock. And from this, we are learning about the fundamental mechanisms for which we perhaps have less than the adequate degree of respect that we might wish to have for them in terms of how we set our shift work hours. If the brain is telling us to go to sleep after 8 hours, maybe it's not a good idea to keep us awake for 12 hours. And then especially if Ryan Olson comes along and says, well, yes, look at the literature. Nurses drop off in their safety rate in the 8th to the 12th hour, or truckers are apparently having a greater rate of injury during the wee hours of the morning. How can we use this fundamental research then to guide our workforce, to guide the community, to try to improve the safety on the job, to try to limit the injuries and fatalities and expense, both in human costs and dollar costs that result from that? So what I've said is that we're trying to understand brain-driven behaviors. Now, OHSU set up an institute under the guidance of the state mandate, as I mentioned, that will be focused primarily on the brain and on behaviors. So here, 20 years later, is an example of a program in activity. And having, I think, not just sitting in the university armchair gathering data, but really out in the grassroots, working with truckers, for example, understanding the factors that can cause or lead to injury, and trying to work with them on equal partnership to try to improve their lives and try to reduce fatalities. Now, in addition to trauma, which of course is a major driver of workers' comp costs, there is also an issue with regard to chemical risk in the workplace. And we're also very proud of really more of a service that we've been permitted to set up within the confines of CROIT, in which Oregon businesses provide a subscription in order for us to provide them with quality information relating to chemical risks. So there are really two types of programs here, both relating to the OSHA hazard communication standard. One is the right to know, and so we have some 41 companies around Oregon that are subscribers at this time. The right to know then service provides safety information to employees. Material safety data sheets are stored within our facility, and these are provided on a request basis. We also provide quality information in terms of interpreting the content of those material safety data sheets to help employees understand them. If a further problem comes up, they may be referred to Dr. Fred Berman with respect to intensive investigation in the Toxicology Information Center. And if it's more of an emergency nature, then of course they're immediately referred to the Oregon Poison Center that really has a different service. These are responding to health issues that have an immediacy to them rather than perhaps concerns relating to exposures to a chemical in the workplace. And then the second aspect to this program is the product stewardship service that provides a 24/7 service all around the world for our multinational companies here in Oregon, such as Hewlett-Packard, that will have customers then in India, in elsewhere across the world, who may have concerns relating, for example, to a solvent that is used in one of their printers. They can call us and obtain free information relating to the nature of the chemical, relating to the hazard that it may present, relating to the suggested appropriate use of that particular chemical. Hewlett-Packard is one of our main supporters in terms of a subscriber to this service. Multnomah County is another one, Corporate Express, and as you can see here, this is a growing miniature business within Croet, in which we're harnessing our resources and providing them to help business and to help the workforce. At this point, I'd like to close my remarks and hand this over to Dr. Kandanga, who can discuss with you the information and outreach side of Croet.
Thank you, Peter. So, in terms of both the current as well as the future Oregon workplace, we are providing information that they need and can use in making their workplace safe or safer. And the first one that I'll mention is croetweb.com, which is basically a site that we've developed and we pay for. And it is a directory of information. You can see a picture of it on the board on the screen at the present time, which basically identifies safety and health information for different industry sectors and by different kinds of problems. We get around 200 hits per year, and the folks from Oregon OSHA, who are the trainers, say that in their classes they tell us that they tell people that this is one of the top, if not the one of the top sites, if not the top site, for providing information on occupational safety and health. Of course, it's focused on Oregon and the industries in Oregon, and so you may see some omissions that are not as relevant for Oregon. We also have the Toxicology Information Center, which gets around 200 calls per year, and you can see a picture on the board, or you can see Fred live right here sitting next to me, who answers questions. And so any Oregonian who wants to call up and ask a question about a chemical that they're concerned with, Fred in that center will answer that. And while 200 calls may look like a small number of calls, it there oftentimes will be hours or even days of work answering the question, providing documentation, and sending it to the requester. So it's a very rich experience for the requester, and we do get very positive responses from people who express their appreciation for the information Fred provides. It's more on the safety and the safety side than Dee Dee Montgomery, who's our industrial hygienist, who runs the croetweb.com, will answer those questions probably. We have newsletters and annual reports, and you've got one of those newsletters in front of you, our most recent one. And it talks about basically what we're doing at the center and information research classes that might be useful to Oregon companies, and we distribute it out to a wide number of Oregonians and companies in labor. I think at the last advisory committee meeting, Representative Schaffler encouraged us to increase the distribution list on this, and so it's one of the many suggestions that went in our revised strategic plan, so we appreciated those recommendations. We also put out an annual report. You see a biannual report in front of you, actually, from the biennium before this. The next one will be coming out that'll include 06 and 07 sometime towards the end of this year, not calendar year, but by June or July. We also attend all Oregon OSHA conferences. Here are a couple of pictures that have from the GOSH conference, which is the biggest conference, but we're at all the conferences. We have exhibits there, and you can see pictures of people, you know, talking to the many people that come up to the booth and to learn more. And while every place we go, many people know about CROID Web and the information center and about CROID, and a large number also don't know. And so we have a lot of questions to answer and information to provide. We've never sort of gotten where we've completely covered the state. So we continue to go to all the OSHA conferences. And then, of course, there's a CROID website on research and education that you can go to, a general, the .edu site that's available for people to learn more about the center. That'll be updated within the next couple of weeks, actually, as OHSU goes to a new unified website design. Well, we also provide education programs, and one of the main ones are health and safety symposia. There's a picture of one up there now. And the two that we've done in the last year are shown, the titles are shown up there on substance use and safety in the workplace and safety at work in informal and non-traditional settings, protecting vulnerable workers. So basically what we do is cover things that OSHA isn't going to cover. They're doing code kinds of things and real specific kinds of training. We take a step back and look at somewhat wider pictures of things generally. We also bring in graduate students and postdocs, and they're kind of, as Peter mentioned, they're the professional safety and health and occupational researchers, both basic and applied scientists, of the future. And when they come into our programs, they're learning how to become essentially those high-level professionals that Peter mentioned, those world-class scientists, as he said, that have been gathered at our center. And we have 20 to 35 per year. Our summer student intern program is another one. We get 10 to 15 students per year. This is a picture of the at the end of the last summer's time period, where the summer students have to put up a poster that describes what they've done over the course of the summer. And those posters are developed in a professional vein, the way you'd see at a professional meeting, and then the faculty come around and ask tough questions of them and ask, you know, various kind of make comments on the presentations, and of course the faculty are also involved in helping them develop these things, so it's kind of an interesting competitive sort of setting. Here's a picture of our class from last year. Also, two people win poster awards for the best posters of the year, which Peter presented again this year. And then finally, we have Oregon school visits. Two programs that we've supported quite a bit are Women in Science and Saturday Academy. And these are pictures up on the screen of some of those experiences where kids, basically high school kids, come in and learn what research is about in a very short period by being in the research labs within the center. And then they may come back to us as summer student interns. And from the summer student program, we've had kids come back at the end of it and say, you know, at least in my case, this is the kind of thing I want to do. I want to be an experimental psychologist and go out and study people in the workplace and find problems and show how to fix those problems. And I've had other people come back to say, I never want to see a research lab again in the rest of my life. So in each case, it's a service. We've taught one person what they might want to do and another person what they don't want to do. So these are valuable programs for Oregonians, and only Oregonians are funded by these programs. So that kind of describes our outreach program. So I think we're at the point of any questions.
The former example of a psychologist that goes into the workplace and helps solve problems, we could probably use some of that in this building, in this work site at times, I can assure you. I really want to thank you guys for coming here. I'm sorry, the whole committee. I know Representative Rosenbaum is very familiar with you.
Yeah.
Representative Esquel had something going on, and I think Representative Edwards, his wife's out of town, and he had to go pick his child up, so we'll forgive them. And Representative Maurer's staff is here. He's in another committee, I believe, right now. But I the more I learn about this, the more valuable a tool I realize it is for workers and employers and anybody who has a business or just working around the house. When I look at this, when I go through the young workers thing, I see myself in here. I mean, I've been a laborer my whole life, except for felling trees, which I've done since I moved to Oregon. But it's very helpful. And I see a wrecked car, that would be me in high school. But anyway, but no, I do have some serious questions, though, too. It kind of has to do with money. The federal grants, are they shrinking? You know, in other areas we hear of the federal government scaling back on grants because their budget challenges. Are they stable? Are they, where are you at on that?
They're not stable. Thank you for your question. The general view is that the federal government is now reducing its support for research across the nation relative to the private sector that is increasing it. This is not a very good trend for individuals who are already experiencing, and I'm now referring to my faculty and the faculty up at OHSU and in other institutions, who may spend at a minimum 3 months developing an application for research, which will then be submitted competitively and find that up to 90% or more may go in the garbage can. The competition for federal grants is extraordinarily high at the present time. The federal government's commitment to research across the nation is diminishing relative to that of the private sector. And we've just had announcements from the National Institutes of Health, on which we rely primarily for federal funding, suggesting further caps. Their budget will be flat, which means that overall the federal budget will diminish in value over time, and so they've had to place severe restrictions on the year-by-year change in the amount of money that the federal government can provide for research. So these are very difficult times. Now, some other sectors, the National Science Foundation, for example, are not experiencing such setbacks. Their budget under the president's initiative will be substantially increased.
And then another fun topic, but because I think this is important that we continue this work. I mean, it's right down to the basic level of workers.
Could I make another comment about that, too?
Right,
I mean, what it really forces us to do is work very hard to become more competitive. And so we've set up some programs like our translational research group that needs to review every grant application that members of the faculty are submitting. And we go over it with a fine-tooth comb. And usually our faculty come out of that thinking, I really need to improve this. And so we work very hard to make each other more competitive by working together as effectively as we can. So we recognizing this problem, we're kind of redoubling our efforts to make sure we're competitive in this environment. But we're worried.
And you can see that, in fact, we are competitive based on the 2-to-1 ratio that I showed you, spanning a number of years and continuing today. But we continue to try to refine our skills in bringing federal dollars to Oregon.
So we expect a little bit more grant funding this coming year than in the past year. So, you know, we are working pretty hard to get there.
Obviously. And then another one that's been in the news, what tort cap that we read about in the paper, what kind of impact is that going to have on CROAT specifically inside OHSU?
Well, the university has obviously had to look very carefully at this this problem, and indeed there will be dollar costs that are spread across the university and will indeed impact CROAT. We anticipate having to pay perhaps greater than $600,000 additionally next year in order to work with the university in meeting its needs.
So operations and maintenance kinds of things.
This has been a major blow, obviously, to the university, and faculty are concerned, including CROAT faculty. After all, these are world-class researchers who are winning these federal grants, bringing money into Oregon. But although the award is given to the university, they can take these grants to another university very easily. And so there is concern among our leadership that faculty may be polishing their CVs and diverting attention from what we want them to do, namely to focus on their research in Oregon and on Oregon problems. We are spending a lot of time looking at how we can increase efficiencies in our program, how we can adjust to these new fiscal realities, how we can not only support our current faculty, but actually see how we can adjust and even build strength on our faculty. Can we lose one program here, but bring in a young investigator who will bode well for the future there? So it's not all negative. We are trying to use this. We're trying to look at it as a positive opportunity, if you like. While there's a lot of pain, and we're sharing in that pain, we're also looking at it as an opportunity to think again, how can we do better?
Yeah, I think, and then I'll open it up to questions to my colleagues here, but I think the tragic thing here is, you know, through all your work that you do out there, when you research all, trying to make it a safer world, there is no quantification of how many people you've saved from being harmed, poisoned, killed, whatever the case may be. We don't have that number to quantify to say, you know, you got your graph about this dollar, you get this many, but imagine if we could somehow quantify it. It's impossible to do, unfortunately, and that just gets, I think, it's forgotten. And if we were to lose this, it would be a blow to us, and I think eventually, and once again, we probably wouldn't measure the direct result of losing this work, but inevitably, it would be damaging. You can't measure it. Well, guys, you got any questions of these fine gentlemen? Representative Holy.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate you bringing this panel before this committee. It's my first look at CROAT, specifically. You know, I've been aware of the program, but not really looked at much at what you did. So I'm quite impressed by your organization and what it does. I've for years have been in the workforce, as my chair has, in the construction industry, and you know, I've appreciated some of the things that have come through OSHA and or OSHA specifically, and I assume that you work closely with that organization in giving them recommendations that maybe they sometimes put into rule. But I've always wondered with the MSDS sheets, you know, that are now required to be at the workplace. But workers sometimes look at those MSDS sheets and couldn't really tell you whether what they're looking at is harmful or not, you know. And sometimes I've wondered why they don't make those MSDS sheets in plain English so you can understand whether or not this is okay to touch or breathe or not. So, just kind of a commentary, and I haven't been in the workplace for a while, so maybe they are a lot clearer now than they used to be. Really appreciate your efforts, because I think they're really important for the people that are out there in the workplace to have a heads up of the potential dangers they're dealing with, because I think a lot of our workforce is not aware of that. And you know, it's through organizations like yourself and cooperation with other agencies that can make that happen. So I really appreciate your work and really appreciate the chair bringing you forward. And I apologize for my cell phone going off, but interrupting you startled me. I usually turn it off religiously, but miss it sometimes. So,
thank you, Representative Holdy. If I may just respond that indeed we do work closely with OSHA, and you notice that I said, of course, that we held the MSDSs within the university databanks, within Crow's databanks. You mentioned that they should be in the workplace. In actual fact, they have to be immediately available. So we can hold these under OSHA requirements within a centralized facility. It's entirely consistent with their rules. Secondly, no, I don't think MSDSs have improved substantially. And thirdly, one of our most important services in this arena is to assist the employee in understanding the nature of those rather obtuse facts that are stated on the MSDS.
Representative Holdy, well, Fred, go ahead. I was just going to add one thing.
You have to identify yourself.
I'm Fred Berman, Director of the Toxicology Information Center. One thing I might add on the MSDS sheets is that Dee Dee Montgomery, our industrial hygienist, and myself have developed an MSDS mini course that we offer at any of the occupational safety and health conferences that we attend. And it's really wonderful to be able to enlighten people on the important parts of MSDS sheets and to inform them, help them to maybe feel a little more comfortable with using them.
Dr. Greener, did you want to say something?
Just real briefly, there is an international move that the U.S. has signed on to called the Global Harmonization System to develop consistent labels and then ultimately consistent MSDS sheets. Because one of the big problems with MSDS is one company is different from the other, and so you don't know where to look for things. This would put them in a specific order with very specific labels. And we are actually have engaged them by NIOSH to work on the training for this. So.
Representative Cannon?
Yeah. That's okay, Mr. Chair. Smile.
Yeah, right, brother.
Thanks for being here. Just a couple quick questions, and I think the Chair was talking about how you can't quantify the lives that we have saved, but as you were talking about the fatalities that we have had, can you share with us how that ranks, like, by hours worked compared to other states that maybe have similar programs in those types of industries or lack of programs? And can we, is there those kinds of analysis that are done?
I don't have those data to hand, but we can certainly see what is available and get that to you. NIOSH, in eliciting in producing these training booklets that I mentioned, incorporate information provided by the FACE programs. So these operate in 15 different states, and clearly there are different priority areas for each state, which will then reflect the differential impact of different aspects of industry on the fatality rate. We can certainly take that on as a project to see if we can't get all available information to you.
Representative Cameron, clearly the fatalities have declined since the 1980s, 1990s in the state. There's been a really dramatic reduction, but that's leveled it off at about 50 to 75 per year. So it still is a very large number, even for a small state by Oregon. But as Peter says, we can look up this information. It's a good question.
And if I follow up to me, so declined in the actual number of
yes.
lives that had lost. And relative to how much business is going on in the state,
yes,
we're doing better. If you looked at it from that perspective, even
Absolutely.
Though the numbers have not gone down.
Absolutely. I mean, there are more people working than there were in the 1980s.
Right.
There are maybe half as many fatalities as there were at that time. So over the years, there's been a definite decline. So, but 50 or 75 people is still a terrible cost and an unacceptable cost.
Yeah.
And the way the FACE program identifies trends and then identifies training to interdict those trends, and in one case there was legislation that was put forth to not allow young workers particularly to work around explosives. You may remember the case of a youngster, maybe it was a scout, who was killed by a cannon going off because they were allowed to be close to the cannon. There's now young workers legislation that came directly from the FACE program, the Oregon FACE program recommendation. So
Except for the logging part, when I was young, at a very young age, I did almost everything in this book, including exposure to explosives, blown out stumps and rocks and fields. I mean, everything in here.
Did you read some of these stories?
Yeah, it's actually miraculous when I look back at my own experience, the close calls. And I just want to, once again, thank you guys. And this committee, actually, is a good makeup of people that have much experience in the real workplace. I think the legislature as a whole reflects that. Most of us aren't gazillionaires. The funding part, obviously, my wife's an alum from OHSU as a dentist. I am a huge supporter of everything you can do. I hope someday we can, in the next session, approach this CAP issue and hopefully get something going in the positive direction. Definitely support. We're going to have to do something. We can't afford this. I can't promise you anything, but we certainly have to take a look. It isn't just you guys. It's every single agency in the state. So, and hopefully still be fair to those that, are injured, obviously. But I think it's just horrible what's going on up there. I think this is the kind of thing. Your funds being diminished because of it, I've never read about that in the paper. And you're just one part of OHSU up there where everybody's going back to their budgets and doing what you can to be more efficient and still remain productive. So unless there's anything else, gentlemen, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And just please don't forget us here. And you're well represented. They know how to get a hold of us. And everything we can within our limited power we'll do to help out.
Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
If there is nothing else, I believe we are adjourned. Thanks again.